Welcome back, everyone. This is the Bless Your Boys podcast. BlessYourBoys.com is your home for all things Detroit Tigers baseball and beyond on the SB Nation platform. I'm your host, Brandon Day. We've been off, well, I don't know, 4 weeks, something like that. A bit of unplanning. I was sick at one point. My sister had a shotgun wedding, and my co-host, Miss Ashley McLennan, circumnavigated North America, I believe, during this time period. Ashley,
how's it going? Have we done anything since I went to Florida?
No, I don't think we've got.
Oh my God! Yeah, I did a baseball road trip up from Miami through Tampa. Ended up in Atlanta, so I checked off those three stadiums, and I got to do the whole press box thing for the Rays, which was pretty cool. And then I had a really impromptu trip to Seattle that was done for work, and unfortunately the Mariners were not in town, which made me almost want to, like, not go on the whole trip and just be like, sorry guys, I can't go if the Mariners aren't playing. But it was a bit of a whirlwind anyway. It would have been pretty tough to get to a game.
Yeah. Have you been to a game in Seattle yet?
No, I haven't. So I got to see Safeco from a distance on my way to the airport, and it was nice, and I grabbed a Mariners t-shirt while I was wandering around, but I'll have to go back next year was my plan anyway. Like, I kind of wanted to check it out over a long weekend next year. So I kind of got to do a little bit of the touristy groundwork on this trip, and then I'll go back next year.
Yeah, kind of check out the area around it.
Yeah, I got to go to Pike Place Market, see them throw some fish.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of goggle at the incredible fruit. And, oh, my God, you guys, in the Pacific Northwest, you are killing me with that produce. Produce and, like, scallops the size of my head, and it was just unbelievable. So I can't wait to go back.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I've never been to Seattle either. Yeah, that's definitely a place I would like to get to. Although I was looking at, I was doing a whole bunch of research about Newfoundland and Labrador and all that the other day, and now I'm that might fulfill some of my, like, I want to go to Northern Ireland and see all the cliffs and stuff. It's the same rock formations.
I haven't done Newfoundland, but I have been to Nova Scotia, which is literally New Scotland by name.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. I highly recommend coming up and seeing the Maritimes if you get a chance. Absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah, it really looks amazing. It looks like it's also, like, hard to differentiate where to go, and, like, maybe the best thing to do is just to get a car and just drive all over the whole thing.
Yeah, it's pretty small. I think you could handle it, and there's, like, big, like, bypasses that'll get you from one island to the other. And yeah, it's big, and there's a lot of very, very small towns, so I think having a car would be the way to go.
Yeah, all kinds of cute little fishing villages and stuff.
Yeah, there's also, and avert your ears if there are children in your car while you're listening to this aloud. There is a town called Dildo in Newfoundland, which is one of my absolute favorite Canadian town names.
Yeah, you have to take a picture.
Absolutely.
Yeah. On the way to Kalamazoo from Detroit, there are two towns. There is both Climax and there is Hell.
Hell was in Michigan. That was right. Oh, I knew that too. Yep. That's so funny.
Yep, Hell is in Michigan in the summer, especially the way it's been going lately. It's been hot.
Yeah. Damn. Living hot. Up to the name.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, we've, there's been a lot that's gone on. It hasn't been terribly exciting. I was thinking back to that, like, first, it's like our first, maybe it was like the first podcast right before the season started, where we were talking about the haves and the have-nots, and this season's, you know, at least in the American League, definitely turning out that way. Like, it just looks like, you know, Boston and the Yankees and the Astros are just monsters, and the Mariners, which is a little bit surprising. And there's a few teams, like, you know, like your Rays, the Tigers haven't been too bad, but, you know, everybody else is just hot garbage. It's just like, you're either good or you're terrible.
Yeah, the biggest surprises for me have definitely been in the National League. Like, the Phillies are doing unbelievably well. The Braves, like, these teams that I really had no expectations for, have really been surprising me. One that I do a weekly recap of what's going on in the National League Central for the Cubs site, Bleed Cubby Blue. And the Reds have just been really surprising me lately. Like, going on weird tears. They swept the Cubs 2 weeks ago in, like, four games.
Yeah.
They've been beating some teams that are meant to be considerably better than them. And I think a lot that might be due to the managerial shift, or just they just got sick of losing. I'm not sure, but it's been pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, a couple bats have gotten hot. Obviously, they took down the Tigers in two games last week. So
yeah. Yeah, that's kind of where it started. And then they did, I think they went on to take 2 out of 4 from the Braves, which is no easy feat right now in this season. So, yeah, it's the Reds are something else. I they're not going to run away with their division or anything, but I think for a team that was, like, rock bottom for the beginning of the season. I think they started something like 3-12 in their first 15 games.
Yeah,
they're doing something, and I think that they may surpass either the Cardinals or the Pirates and do something pretty interesting.
Yeah, they're
finish the season maybe fourth place.
Yeah, they're only a couple games behind the Pirates now. I mean, they were in last place, and like you said, it was kind of like if the Royals had gone on some crazy, like, you know, 15-5 run or something. That's basically how it's been. And now they've kind of all bunched up there. Milwaukee still leading the way.
Kind of joke that they were before. So that's kind of a sleeper to watch for, but not by any means a sleeper to watch for, like, winning the season.
Yeah.
But just don't count them out yet an okay, maybe. I don't think they're even going to get to a 500 season, honestly, but I think there's something there to keep an eye on.
Yeah, that start was just too brutal, but they could at least like kind of get themselves into that shape where it's like, okay, maybe, you know, maybe next year we can do some things. I know there's people interested in Raisel Iglesias, their closer, of course, and so they should have a few chips to trade as well. It just feels they're in a weird spot. You know, they're in that spot where they've got Joey Votto, who's, you know, starting to get older, and you don't know how much longer he's going to be Joey Votto for. And it's like, go for it as fast as you can. But yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see if they can hit big on a few trades, maybe do something in this offseason. The Central doesn't look that good. You know, like the Cardinals haven't been very impressive. The Pirates are just kind of the Pirates, always in the middle 500. And the Cubs,
it's a lot
Cubs
of like middling
problems.
Stuff. It's really just the Cubs and the Brewers. It's the nice Midwest show.
Yep. And speaking of the Cubs, we went out to Fair Wrigley today and had another bullpen meltdown. And I'm afraid that, you know, now that Shane Green is on the disabled list, at least for a little while with the shoulder sprain, like that, I mean, this bullpen is just going to struggle. It's going to be even uglier than it has been. So that may be a kind of preview of what's to come before the All-Star break. Maybe after that, you know, they'll get Green back and kind of piece things together. Not that they have Hardy in the bullpen, but yeah, it's been pretty grim the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's not been ideal, and it's kind of sad that it's tough, that 11-game losing streak we just came off of and had two wins, and then we lost again today. It's not, I'd say the rally goose is cooked.
Yeah, I think
that's for sure.
And, you know, two weeks ago, we had just won five straight. You know, we were like a game and a half or maybe even a half game behind the Indians at one point.
It was pretty
close. Looking good. Yeah, I don't even know if we've talked since Miggy went down. Maybe that was the last show that we did, was where Miggy, you know, went out for the season. But, you know, they seemed to rally, you know, behind that for a couple weeks. But yeah, it's just fading now.
Yeah, they're kind of to the point where I think a lot of people thought they'd be at the beginning of the season. I think this is sort of what we expected from the Tigers. It's not fun to see, especially since they had such a good run, and you kind of able to see what they were capable of. So seeing them kind of in this middling place is no fun, but it's not easy when you got guys like Green down, when Miggy's out for the season, when you have to call up, you know, Mikey Mahtuk and Jim Adusi for a game against the Cubs.
Yeah, you got John Hicks playing first, and
yeah, you're almost everyday first baseman. Like, it puts them in a position where they're kind of strained, and these guys can only do so much. Like, you can only count on your like second string guys to play first string for so long before something gives, and I think that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah, and so many times, you know, those nice starts guys get off to early in the year just aren't sustainable. You know, guys like Hicks and Jacoby Jones, you know, they figure out pretty quick how to pitch to you once you become a bit of a threat and just kind of, you know, shove you right back down where you belong again, and we've kind of seen that. You know, Nick Castellanos obviously has been hitting the cover off the ball again after a little bit of a slump. He's looking great. Candelario still looks great. But, you know, Leonis Martin went down this week with another hamstring issue, and he's been kind of one of the big producers. So they're in bad shape. And I could see Castellanos' walk rate starting to creep up here because, you know, you can pretty much just pitch around him and have your way with most of this lineup, I'm afraid, at this point.
Well, and the other tough thing we're seeing now, you see a guy like Martin, my apologies to Leonis, Martin go down, you see a guy like Green go down. These are big, big topics. Like, these are guys that we're talking a lot about for trades.
Yeah.
And we're leading, we're in July now, and we're leading up to that point, and guys start to lose value a little bit if they don't look healthy. And you want these guys to come back and look good so that we can at least get them in a couple of games for prospective teams that might want them to see that they're still, you know, in trade shape.
Yep. And unfortunately, you know, Green had kind of stumbled the last couple weeks. So we, you know, we were already kind of looking at that, like, well, you know, I just don't know if the deals are going to be there to bother moving him. You know,
yeah.
Martin, it's kind of the same thing. You know, Iglesias, I guess at this point you'd take anything for. That's probably how it's been all along, but that's kind of like a circumstantial thing. Like, if a team needs him, I could see somebody making a deal. He's been playing well the past 2 months, really, after a slow start. But, yeah, it's really hard to look and see where there's going to be a whole lot of exciting trade action at this point.
I think the Michael Fulmer rumors
are kicking up, but, you know, until Michael Fulmer kind of goes on a monster, you know, run again, you know, you're probably not going to get full price for him either. And, you know, the Tigers are you know, had really better extract a lot of pieces from somebody, especially a middle infield prospect of some quality, or it's going to be hard to sell that to me or anyone else. So,
yeah, I think you might get some interest in Liriano, but that's even going to be tough now considering how poor his showings have been since coming back.
Yeah.
There's not a lot that I think they're going to try and move who they can. But I don't think you're going to get anything exciting back in any of this, unless it's for a Fulmer trade. I think any of these other guys you move, it's going to be bits and pieces, AA guys, maybe, you know, some money.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Kind of like the kind of guys they got back for, like, Justin Upton, like maybe some nice lottery ticket type, you know, young arms or something, but not a whole lot. And that does bring us to, you know, one other topic. The international signing day on July 2nd just occurred, and the Tigers spent, you know, a good chunk of their bone pool right out of the gate on an outfielder and a shortstop. There's still Victor Mesa, the Cuban import, who hasn't signed anywhere, and there are a bunch of teams that already have spent a lot of money, and there are also quite a few teams that are in the penalty because of how much they'd spent previously or various other issues, and can't pay him a multi-million dollar, you know, deal to sign him. So you have to look at that maybe, and I do hope the Tigers front office is scheming some ways to trade for some international bonus pool money this year. We missed out on the boat there last year in a couple deals where they didn't do that well, like the JD deal, where maybe they could have got some of that thrown in. And if they could do that and get Victor, that would make for a really nice haul. I know.
That would be awesome. And I read they picked up three shortstops.
Yep.
Three shortstops, and then Jose de la Cruz, I think, was the outfielder they grabbed.
Yep, and he's the most expensive, the bunch there. Yeah, both of them top 30. Adinso Reyes, I think, who's Dominican. So, I mean, it's really hard to tell with 16-year-old guys, but, you know, it seems like they've been aggressive like they said they would be, and the draft, you know, generally has gotten pretty good reviews. There's, you know, Tigers picked up a lot of interesting players with some tools, like guys with a, you know, a good pitch, or outfielders with speed and power, and maybe not the hit tool you'd like to see, but, you know, maybe one of those guys puts it together. So, yeah, if they could get Victor at the end of all this, I think it would look like a pretty darn good haul this season for the farm.
Also just fun to say.
Mm-hmm. I want to be able to use my Chekhov from Star Trek impersonation and call him Victor.
Victor.
Yes. It would all be worth it if we could just get that going.
Oh, rip Anton Yelchin.
I know, that is sad. I loved Anton. He's great.
Yeah,
he's great in a lot of things. And yeah, you know, that's the thing. Like, we're all kind of looking forward to the trade deadline. Like, this is kind of like the big postseason for the Tigers this year. And yeah, I don't know. We'll just have to see how it goes, but it looks like it might be kind of bleak unless someone gets crazy and really comes hard after Fulmer.
Yeah, that's the only way I see anything exciting happen. I think we'll move some pieces, but I don't think you're going to get many names back that you've ever heard of. I think it's just going to be like a let's, you know, stock these with some off-brand guys that you hope may become something.
Yeah, you try to get like some young, like 18, 19-year-old guys who aren't really on the map yet, you know, maybe steal somebody that way. But yeah, it's probably not going to be a whole lot that's going to move the needle. And the Tigers don't really look like they've got anybody who's going to make it to the All-Star game. There's kind of a campaign out there for Nick Castellanos, but it just seems like there's too many other outfielders out there.
Well, I think you'll get somebody in, like, from the managerial pool, like, but who, right? Like, we feel like we've had this discussion before, but I don't even know how I would pinpoint somebody that deserves to go. Like, of all the team, I guess maybe Nick, but...
Yeah, I mean, I could see Nick just because there aren't that many guys who are dedicated right fielders who play the position every day, so maybe he kind of grades out near the top among right fielders, or at least well, so... maybe he could get in there. And yeah, maybe somebody picked, maybe they picked Joe Jimenez for the bullpen. Although
yeah.
I do not want Joe Jimenez throwing in the game, but if he gets selected, that'd be kind of cool for him.
Yeah, that's honestly, like, I don't even know, because you know they make that effort, right? You know they try to get somebody from every team, but it's like, I read somewhere on Twitter today that Jays fans are getting worried that they'll pick one guy and he'll get traded before the game even happens. I mean, they traded Steve Pierce last week, which was quite a thing to the Red Sox. So, I mean, they're obviously kind of, they've given up, which isn't surprising given where they are in the East.
Yeah.
I think we're going to start seeing a lot of that, which is...
And that could happen with J.A. Happ could be the big one, you know, like, yeah, he might get selected and then end up, you know, pitching in New York or something.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that's where the trade deadline is going to be pretty exciting for us this year, is not necessarily what we see happen on our team, but all the bonkers moves that are going to happen on other teams.
Yeah. It's kind of weird out there because there are some teams who need players that don't really have the farm anymore to get them, like Boston and Seattle. Seattle's number one pick, I think, last year, Sam Carlson, right-handed prep pitcher they took. He's going down. He just went down with Tommy John surgery. So you're probably not trading for him, although I don't know, maybe that's not a bad way to get a guy like that and take a chance. But yeah, it's just hard to see Seattle having the pieces, even with Jack DePoto just being a maniac up there and willing to do anything and deal anyone. So
gotta love, yep. Love DePoto's trade mentality.
Yep.
I don't know, after they move for Colomé and Span, I'm not sure they've got a lot more. I guess it's hard to say, right? Because they are in a position where they could actually win.
Yeah.
And so that's going to put them in a pretty eager mindset. But they've done pretty well on that last trade. Like, that's served them fairly well so far.
Yep.
So I could see them maybe angling to get something, but it's hard to say what their needs are right now.
Yeah.
If there's something that's so glaring that they, you know, would be willing to push for a farm or move one of their, like, bench guys. Like, yeah, they got Andrew Romine. What do they need?
They got
every position covered.
It seems like they could use a starting pitcher, but yeah, I just don't know that they're going to be able to get anybody particularly notable. You know, we've heard repeatedly, you know, that they'd like to get Boyd back, and obviously Boyd is from the Seattle area, and that would kind of make a perfect fit, and he fits in that ballpark as a fly ball pitcher, but I just can't see how they're going to put together enough pieces to make me really want to bother trading Matt Boyd, although he is kind of at peak value, struggling a little bit lately, but having a very good year. So, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be weird to see how some of these teams finagle something. There's a lot of sellers, and that doesn't bode well for the teams who are selling. So we'll have to see how that just plays out. Unfortunately, yeah, like, you know, for the Tigers, the only big news that we've had in the past couple weeks has been the firing of former pitching coach Chris Bosio for racially charged and insensitive comments to a club employee. I don't know we've had a little time to kind of absorb how this all went down. You know, it feels like to me, like the Tigers, you know, handled this really well. They handled it aggressively. And despite Bosio's initial protestations, there's kind of an ample sort of sourcing on the fact that no one else in the organization, from players to coaches or anyone else, seems to have no interest in standing up for him and isn't corroborating any of his story. So it feels like that all went as well as it could. It's just that obviously now the Tigers are down maybe the only coach in the entire system that I was actually happy to have, which sucks.
I know.
He had to go. You got to go. You can't do that kind of thing.
I really respect what they did by taking such immediate and decisive action, because, I mean, especially, like, not ever should it be okay. Like, let me just start by saying that. Like, never, ever should it be okay for that kind of language to be used in a clubhouse. And he shouldn't validate it by saying things like, oh, but we cracked fat jokes all the time. For, like, you know, poor Doug Teeter,
yeah.
I would assume.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I think that's who is getting the flack there, yeah.
But, like, you know, it's not okay to, like, to point out anybody's, like, differences and use that as bait for jokes. And it was very apparent that whoever he launched this at, it wasn't meant as a joke, and it wasn't taken as a joke. And he tried to brush it off, saying he was joking about Daniel Stumpf, is what I gather.
Yeah.
But the tough part is that we weren't there. We didn't witness it. We haven't heard anything directly from the sources. I mean, Katie Strang and Ken Rosenthal did what I thought was a pretty good piece. I think we had a couple differences of opinion on how they ended it, and it was a bit character I wouldn't say an assassination piece, but it was a little bit, it went into areas at the end, I think, that we can agree were unnecessary to drudge up.
Yeah, that's all. I mean, I thought it was a really good piece of reporting, yeah, up until it just got a little sketchy there at the end. But the reporting and the sourcing, you know, I trust Ken Rosenthal. I trust Katie Strang.
I mean, absolutely. I don't.
So, yep.
But
I have no doubt.
Even then, neither Ken nor Katie were there for the event either, right?
Right.
So, like, you can only, I think that the fact is that what we're seeing out of this situation is something that we're never going to get the full story. The full story from either Bosio or the Tigers. The Tigers have said all they're going to say. The anonymous sources have said all they're going to say. And I believe that the sources were being honest in what they said. And I know that what the Tigers did was absolutely what they had to do in that sort of situation. Like, like I said, it's never okay, but especially now with such like racial tension and all of these things going on in the country, there's no room for it at all. Like, and like, again, not ever, but especially not now. And I think you have to show yourself, especially with all the backlash they got from the Derek Norris
firing. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah.
And they've realized, I think, how bad it looks for them when this sort of thing hits the public spectrum. And they got ahead of it. They're like, look, before anything comes out, we fired him. Some things were said. He violated policy. That's that. He's done. And so we were all sitting here going, well, what did he say?
Like, right.
This was before anybody broke it. Nobody knew what had gone on. And so, like, that's really beating things to the punch. So, I mean, I know there's even people on our staff and people online wondering maybe if it was just an easy way for them to get rid of him because of personality differences or, you know, things that they weren't agreeing with in his approach. But I don't think that you go to that extreme of assassinating somebody's character that way.
And open yourself up to, you know, to
public, spectacle.
And a lawsuit, you know, and obviously, you know, I mean, if that was a wrongful firing, you know, the Tigers would come out of this looking very bad.
Absolutely. So I think that you have to look at it in that sense, and that there has to be an element of truth and a strong element of truth to what the sources are saying for it to stick. And it's a bummer because you're right. Like, I was super excited about Bosio. I was excited to see what he was doing with the players. But at the end of the day, it has to be a safe and welcoming environment for everybody, from players to staff to the guys picking up the laundry. They all have to feel like they can work there and not be judged or discriminated against. So the Tigers did the right thing.
Yep. And and I think, you know, we might have disagreed a little bit on the Derek Norris thing. Not much. I mean, like, really, neither of us really wanted him here. But I think, even from my perspective, if they had taken Derek Norris and appeared to have gotten out in front of that and understood how that was going to come off and been prepared and had vetted him, talked to him about the situation, and just handled the whole thing more professionally and in a way that, you know, that kind of reflected, you know, the seriousness of the situation, the way that, you know, those kind of issues are taken now, hopefully more seriously. You know, maybe they could have, you know, made that all, you know, go a little smoother. And maybe that did affect the way they handled this, because, you know, the other thing about it is, you know, we were all wondering what was said. We never would have known. You know, maybe it's all for the best that Chris Bosio came out with the whole, oh, I was calling Daniel Stump spider monkey, you know, thing, because it allowed kind of, I think, the Tigers to kind of fire back, you know, behind the scenes. Like, they weren't going to come out and issue a public statement, but, you know, you have to assume that that allowed them to free up some of their employees, or at least their employees felt more empowered to come back and say, hey, you know, we're going to dispute, you know, his part of that story, because obviously Daniel Stump, you know, came out and was like, no one calls me spider monkey. I've never heard that before.
And none
of the other pitchers. I know, now he is spider monkey. I know, now
they
he's
apparently
getting called it.
There was quite a chorus of it today at Wrigley. He got called spider monkey quite a bit today. I don't know. What I found interesting, and this was a fact that came up, and this is totally unrelated. Well, it's related to the firing, but it's a byproduct. This is the seventh game, I think, consecutive game for the Tigers where the starter has gone six innings or more. Which is absolutely a direct byproduct of Bosio being gone, because he would have been like the first to pull a guy. And I think right now you've got
Yeah, Rick Anderson is much more old school about those sorts
Rick
of
Anderson
things.
And Gardenhire are both very old school in their approach to milking as much time out of your starter as you can. And I honestly think if Bozzio had still been around, you wouldn't have seen Michael Fulmer go back out for another inning after that really taxing fifth against the Cubs. I wouldn't have put him back out, and he went out and he did fine. Like, and maybe there's something to be said for that, but that fifth was really stressful to watch.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think you're going to see lots of differences in how the pitching's approached now, and I don't know if that's going to be for the better.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, I doubt that it kind of will be, but I would say, you know, that, you know, the kind of coach that Chris Bozzio seemed to be, like a guy who would basically take over your delivery and everything, you know, like a lot of coaches, a lot of pitching coaches, when they come in, are, you know, they're not messing with you. They're waiting to be asked about things. They're just kind of like running the schedules, you know, planning guys' usage out and helping guys with individual things as requested. There's that style coach. And then there's a middle ground, but then there's the Bozzios of the world who come right in and go, I want you to do this. I want you to change your foot position. I want you to keep your, you know, your hat brim down to help you keep the ball down, and, you know, like have all these things that they want you to work on. And it's, you know, it's entirely possible that a hard driving coach like that just tends to burn through guys pretty quickly. And it may be that the Tigers already got the best out of them. You know, the familiarity with, you know, with using like Rapsodo technology to, you know, check spin rates and spin angle and, you know, release points and all that kind of stuff in the bullpen. Like, you know, he brought a lot of that, that comfortability with, you know, modern technology and data gathering, in the bullpen, like in the context of teaching. And so maybe they got the most, out of him that they could. I am not going to be real happy if they keep Rick Anderson going forward. But for the rest of the year, it is what it is. And with a young team, and I've heard Justin Verlander say this a million times, and it's Justin Verlander, and he's not a normal, you know, not a normal person. So I don't know that, you know, his opinion about this actually is that applicable to other people. But he's always gone on and on about the fact that, you know, Leland was old school and would let him throw deep into games. And because of that, he learned how to do it. And, you know, the Tigers don't have anything to lose right now. So it's not going to, you know, it's not going to bother me that much if they don't want to turn to, you know, the likes of Warwick Saupold and, you know, Drew VerHagen and guys like this in the sixth inning and try to stretch these guys out. It's, you know, that doesn't bother me too much if you know, we have some rough goes on that front. But as a winning strategy, I don't think it's, you know, it's really the way to go nowadays.
No, and, like, maybe that's it. Maybe you're using it to let these guys like Liriano, like Zimmerman, like Fulmer, who have struggled a little bit, maybe it gives them a chance to kind of flex that muscle a little bit more and play with a couple different things and maybe see where they're kind of losing it.
Yeah. And mentally learn how to deal with, you know, being tired, like to be tired and still pitch another inning, you know?
So, I mean, there could be something very positive to it. And I guess that just remains to be seen. And we'll see it because there's no other option at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and the other thing too is they just don't have the bullpen to really do it any other way, especially with Green out. You know, getting Hardy in that bullpen makes me feel a good deal better, but now you have Green back out, and so you're still dealing with basically a two-pitcher bullpen. You know, there's two guys in there that I really trust. Lewis Coleman has been sketchy lately, but he did have a run where he was pretty good. Maybe he'll help out. Alex Wilson just doesn't look like the same guy we had, you know, a couple years ago anymore. Maybe he'll, you know, get over having a broken shin and torn plantar fasciitis and all that kind of stuff and feel better and pitch better at some point. But it's pretty hard to argue for them turning things over to the bullpen in the sixth inning when you know, are going to have to put two or three guys like that out there before you can get to Jimenez. So
yeah,
it's, you know, it's their philosophy, but it's also just sort of, you know, the way it kind of probably has to be right now. The other thing about Rick Anderson, and I'm sure everybody on the site who's a pitching hound knows this, that, you know, he made comments a few years ago that his philosophy was he wanted you to pitch to contact and he wanted you to limit the walks. And while that isn't like so radically different from what a lot of pitching coaches teach, it does sound like he's a little bit less apt to want guys to set people up for a strikeout by, you know, okay, you've got him down two strikes, waste a pitch above the belt and then go down. He kind of wants you to come right at guys. And we're gonna have to see who takes to that and who doesn't. Maybe he's not that forceful about it. Maybe pitchers will kind of, at this point in the season, are kind of just in their groove and will just sort of, you know, go about things the way they've been going out about things. But, those are kind of like the two touchstones of his whole philosophy. And it, you know, maybe it was the right philosophy for the Twins at the time because they had garbage in that bullpen, they had garbage in the rotation. It was a lot of bad pitchers, and probably the best thing they could do was let guys hit it and try not to walk anybody. But I would hesitate to see that kind of philosophy put on someone like Michael Fulmer, who we're trying to get more strikeouts out of to turn him into that kind of ace caliber pitcher. So
especially if you want any kind of return from him down the future, or even just to make him a key part of the rotation in the future.
Yeah.
To make him that guy, you need him to do better.
Yeah. To make him the guy that, that is an ace, still young, that everybody wants and that we will still want and is worth a ton. Yeah. He's got to find that strikeout touch a little bit more regularly. And I don't know if Rick Anderson's the guy to help with that, but I don't know. Fulmer's a big boy. He's got a few years in, so hopefully he can figure some of this out himself by now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are the team issues, and we're kind of into the dog days of summer now, where we're just going to kind of have to ride this out and take the little bits of joy where we can. Nico Goodrum has been a nice surprise this year, and he's kind of been back hitting and coming through with some big plays lately. Iglesias has as well, but it's kind of what we expected. Yeah. The hot start, for considering who they have on the team, and then just how much can they hang on and how far will they fall, toward the number one draft pick next year. So we'll just have to say it. Yeah. Another interesting thing going on off the field that I know we've both kind of paid attention to is the 619 podcast, which is the podcast hosted by Nick Castellanos and Shane Green. Those boys now have 4 episodes in the can, and it's been a pretty interesting listen, and kind of plays to some things we've talked about before about how Major League Baseball tries to market its players but struggles to, and how it needs to have maybe a looser hitting them kind of handle things themselves, whether it's by, designing custom shoes or, having a little swag out there or deciding to host your own podcast, which I don't think any other active players have ever done anything like this. And it's been kind of mind-boggling to listen. What's your early impressions on that?
I've been through the first episode and I've got the other 3 queued up. I know there's some special guest stars by episode 4, which is kind of cool. I listen to a lot of podcasts and I'm obviously on too. So I'm a little bit iffy about the sound quality because I have to jack the volume way up. And that may have gotten better in later episodes.
It did get a little better, but it is kind of funny because they're right in the booth. They're literally in a booth,
which is in the booth, like the recording booth. So it's funny.
Yeah.
But I do find it's pretty quiet. That said, Nick Castellanos is just an absolute natural when it comes to just talking.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that in his off the side interviews during the season when Fox Sports, when one of the guys comes and chats with him about something, he's just very cool. I hate to say this surprisingly, but he's surprisingly well spoken.
Yeah.
I think it always kind of takes me by surprise when a guy who plays Major League Baseball is really thoughtful with what he's saying.
Yeah.
Because you're so used to I get it. I'm out for the team and we're going to do what the team needs and, yay team. We're going to sports harder than the other team sports is and we're going to go.
Yeah.
So he comes out and he talks about getting off the mental roller, the mental merry-go-round and just starting to be more thoughtful about his approach to the game. And this kid's 26? I think Nick is 26 now.
Yep.
He's really grown a lot since he came up with the Tigers, and I think you get a lot of that out of his approach to the podcast. He's very natural in his discussion with Shane, because it's Castellanos and Shane Green, and they just chit-chat back and forth, and by the first episode, you already get a real sense the baseball has only ever been their lives. It's the only thing in their lives. It's the only thing they've known. Mm-hmm. They planned their entire lives around it.
And they also have very different paths,
absolutely. And
cool.
But I found it very fascinating to know Shane was very open about how he only took something because somebody told him it would be the easiest thing to take while he was also focusing on sports.
Yeah.
So he took, I think, accounting or business management or one of those things, which is a suitable fallback if the baseball thing doesn't work out.
Yeah.
But I just found it so interesting how they built their whole lives to be in baseball, and that was the only option, and everything else was just a fallback.
Yeah, especially for Shane, because he was very, he came from really total obscurity, had Tommy John surgery, right before he was supposed to start pitching in college, and basically,
Yeah.
you know, had nowhere to go, had to find a place where he could even rehab the arm. I mean, you get this surgery done and you're just some kid with no coaches, no team, and they just send you out there with some, you know, vague rehab instructions. And he had to figure that stuff out on his own, and he was in the minor leagues a long time, whereas, you know, Nick was, you know, a star, you know, in high school and on those travel teams in Florida, which is a hotbed, and he knows everybody. Like, you've kind of seen that, you know, even earlier on in Nick's career, that he knows everybody. He's played with everybody. Like, he and Frankie
Yep.
Lindor are boys, you know,
He
and
went to
with a
high
lot of
school there at
people.
Cosmer.
Yep, went to, you know, all from that same kind of group of players who are, you know, in their mid-20s to late-20s now. You know, he was a known commodity. He was a, you know, a competitive balance, you know, I think he was, yeah, the competitive balance round A right after the first round pick by the Tigers. So there have always been expectations. He came up, you know, when he was 21, before he was probably even ready. And you can see he's the reason he sounds like he's, you know, a 32-year-old ball player is because from the time he was 21, he was in a clubhouse that was expected to win a World Series with, you know, Torii
Yeah.
Hunter and Miguel Cabrera and Victor Martinez and Ian Kinsler and then JD Martinez showing up and all these studs, you know, Justin Verlander, like these guys, you know, are like the cream of the crop all around him. And he had to live up to that from an early age. And it is really funny, like how many like aphorisms Nick Castellanos has in his head. He doesn't have a whole lot of like mechanical thoughts about swinging and stuff like that, but it's all like, you know, the minor league, you know, there's only the major leagues and the minor leagues, you know, don't worry about the minor leagues when you're in the minor leagues. You're just trying to get to the major leags. And just has all this, you know, this crap, this just like this jive that he has. And I like that they've, you'll hear this in as the episodes go along, but there's a phrase that's on the plane. You know, we keep that on the plane because apparently like Nick is in the back of the plane on every flight with a bunch of the younger guys, like just, you know, Socratic methoding these guys and asking, you know, a ton of like ludicrous philosophical questions and making them ask, you know, what the sound of a tree falling in the woods is if there's no one around to hear and just like going through
That's
all that stuff.
amazing.
And it is funny because it's just like watching a guy like trying to, you know, kind of broaden his perspective and think about a lot of things who doesn't really have any formal education at all
Well,
and yet is like pretty bright still, you know, it's interesting.
you mentioned Torii Hunter, and I think that's a really interesting thing to bring up, is that he spent some time with Torii Hunter on the off season.
Yeah.
And like I really feel that he picked up stuff from Torii that has nothing to do with baseball.
Yeah.
I think he really took that Torii Hunter clubhouse mentality, and he's applying it like crazy this year. Like I think he's really come up as a natural leader in that clubhouse.
Yeah, I agree.
And he's filling a gap that I think that Verlander's left behind, and especially without, I mean, we know Miggy's there, but you also get the jokes of Miggy not learning anybody's names, right?
Yep.
And I
Maybe he
think
comes to
Nick's
work
gonna,
and plays. Yep.
yeah, I think Nick's the kind of guy who gets in there and he, you know, he figures out everybody's name and he figures out what their path was, and you know, he's probably the first guy there saying, "Hey, like, welcome to the show," kind of thing. And after Miggy went down, there was like reports afterwards that Gardy went in and he's like, "I don't want you guys sitting here sad. Nick turned some music on." And you know, I think
Yeah, and I believe Nick
he's
and Gardy actually sat down and like talked to, you know, between the two of them about how to keep the team on track and, you know, and
yeah.
keep everybody playing hard and confident. So those are
So
good traits.
I think he's a really important factor for this team. And I know if we go back to the beginning of this podcast, I was very anti-Nick. Like I thought he didn't take things seriously enough, and I thought that he didn't have enough to make it, in that he was good but not that good. But I think in what he's bringing now, I will be really disappointed if the Tigers don't re-sign him. I think they should make an effort. I mean, not an all-out effort. He's not worth, you know, breaking the bank over as a player.
Yeah.
But I think the force of good that he brings to that clubhouse and can continue to bring as new generations come up is valuable, and something that I think that they should put some merit and some weight into, because I think he could be a really important factor in this rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, he's not, you know, going to get a JD Martinez contract. And I hope he understands that 'cause I would like to keep him as well. I mean, obviously, maybe I've been the one driving, you know, that train the longest. I mean, I was writing about, you know, extending him last year and stuff, and I've always kind of been a big booster of Nick, but you know, he just seems to have internalized how to deal with failure in baseball, and dealing with failure is one of the key parts of becoming a good major league ball player, because everybody fails most of the time, at least as hitters.
So 70% of the time, yeah.
Yep. And you know, it just seems like he really learned a lot by, you know, by getting beat up at third base and then having to just turn that off and not feel bad about it and go out there and go to the plate with a clear head and hit. And he's a different kind of, he is more like the Torii Hunter type guy. You know, he actually almost described the, I wish I could remember how he said it, but he described the difference between Torii Hunter and Ian Kinsler as sort of like the two kind of polar opposite type leaders. Like Ian Kinsler will get on you and be barking at you and will break down your swing and has like actual mechanical advice. Whereas Torii Hunter is more the, you know, the personal touch type guy, you know, the guy who, you know, has the emotional intelligence to see who's down, who's struggling in the room. And that's the kind of guy, yeah, it seems like Nick is. He's the one who'll put his arm around you when he knows you're beating yourself up over how you played, and you're a young player, and will kind of, you know, help get you through that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, there's value there. It is, you know, there's baseball logic, and it's tricky to necessarily see how he's going to fit in the roster long term, but there are ways that they can make that work. And I used to be one of those people who would definitely be on the side of like, it's all, you know, production is all that matters. Like all this, you know, touchy feely stuff about, you know, being a good teammate and blah, 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 you know, like that's all nice. And that's a little bonus, but it doesn't matter that much. But you know, you look at the way that the Dodgers and the Cubs and the Astros all think about those subjects. And I think the Yankees and Red Sox, you know, at least have tried to kind of build this into their, you know, their kind of player development system is, you know, it's important to have a bunch of guys who support each other, pick each other up, keep each other loose, but also, you know, check each other and hold each other accountable. And those things are important. And yeah, it really does feel like Nick Castellanos is sort of the guy right now in the Tigers locker room. And yeah, I mean, I've always liked his personality, but yeah, he's more thoughtful than maybe I think, you know, people would have taken from it first, because he's not a guy who beats himself up after a game. He'll talk to the reporters and just kind of, you know, own whatever happened and just goes on. And, you know, from the outside, that can look like, ah, he doesn't care that much, or, you know, he's not trying that hard, or this or that, but he's just isn't giving it any eyewash. You know, he's not, you know, putting on a performance for the media where he beats up on himself and is like, oh, this is terrible and I have to do better. You know, he's about, you know, results. And yeah, that's,
yeah, I don't think there's a lot of pretense there. I think Nick is very much, this is me, and I'm just going to give you my thoughts straight up. And I think what's incredible about that is that we're getting to see those thoughts as they evolve. And it's really kind of cool to see what he's growing into.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I mean, he just has that confidence and that sort of like, you know, that kind of perfect baseball kind of mentality. Whereas, you know, JD Martinez is much more of like an intense, like I can tell you, you know, at every moment of my swing, like where my hands are supposed to be and where the bat is supposed to be and what I'm expecting in this count, and can teach kind of, you know, like the technique more. And I've been hearing that he really has kind of taken over the Red Sox locker room in kind of the same way. And it's frustrating, you know, you just see like the Tigers like seeding all these teams with like this, you know, intelligent, you know, veteran experienced talent.
Yeah.
It's like super frustrating. But,
well, I mean, like you said, I wrote about it early in the season that he's not going to get a JD Martinez contract, and not many people are going to get that kind of contract next season.
Not anymore.
So I think if the Tigers come back with a fair offer, he'd be real smart to stay where he is.
I think so too. Like last year, I was thinking like maybe we could get him for like $5 and $60 million, so $12 million a year. It might cost a little bit more because now they've waited long enough that he's played right field some and isn't good out there, but isn't hurting the team the way he did at third base, and might still get better in right field. And you kind of now see like, okay, the floor for his performance is much more set than it looked like maybe last year when it was like, oh, he's not a third baseman anymore. Is he a DH? Like, what's he going to do? So we may have kind of missed out there, but yeah, I do hope they can kind of work something out there, as long as it's not terribly onerous, and maybe you give him an opt out or something when he's 30 and keep him around to kind of raise up the young pups here for a few more years. But anyway, I definitely would recommend everybody out there, you know, our podcast is obviously the best, having anything to do with the Detroit Tigers when it's actually on. But yeah, I would definitely recommend people go check those episodes out. Episode 4, they had Casey Mize on, which was pretty cool. You know, Casey Mize, obviously, you know, he sounded like he was a little bit deer in the headlights in there. You know, he'd gone and signed this contract, got his first huge check, took all these pictures, you know, got evaluated by the U of M medical staff, and you know, they took high speed camera images of his delivery and did muscle testing on him and all that kind of stuff, which is cool that the Tigers have started doing with a lot of their top prospects. They've done that with like Alex Fiedo and Kristen Stewart. I believe Bo Burrows, a bunch of guys. So Franklin Perez. So that's been a cool development, but you know, he kind of went through all that and then had to come on the air with like two veteran big leaguers and talk. And he sounded like, and he was even more like, guys, I don't know anything but baseball. Like, I didn't try in school. I didn't care about it. I have no idea. I'm an idiot, except for baseball. But yeah, it just came out there. So he definitely sounded that way. And they had Victor Martinez in episode 3. That was pretty cool hearing things from Victor's perspective after, you know, what it was like when he came into the league and coming from Venezuela and trying to, like, learn the language. And, you know, him telling stories about trying to go to fast food restaurants because he could just say a number and get food. It's just like, man, you know, like, why isn't there anybody looking out for these people? I think there are now, but, you know, 15,
I think more
ago,
so, but it's still tough. There was a great article on ESPN, I think, last year. That was like an oral history of these guys of the Latin baseball movement. And it was like some huge, huge names came in and did interviews. And it's really worth looking at if you can find it. I think it's just like ESPN baseball, but baseball like the Spanish style baseball, and oral history, and find it. It's worthwhile. But what I was going to say is another kind of quick note. Both Leonis Martin and Jose Iglesias just became citizens.
Yeah, that was cool.
Kind of a wonderful thing just ahead of the 4th of July. And they got to have their ceremony on the field at Comerica. And Martin's wife, I think, also got her citizenship the same day. So that was really, really kind of cool. I love seeing that.
Yeah. I love that.
They
too.
Did one, the Iowa Cubs did one, I think tonight, either tonight or they're doing one tomorrow on the 4th of July for, I think, just 30 random like fans/citizens of the area from 17 different countries. I think it's really neat to see those. And I was very excited for Iggy and Martin.
Yeah, it's nice to see that international flavor, you know, kind of be celebrated, especially, you know, kind of with what's been going on with the immigration situation.
Yeah.
And as well, you know, with the World Cup being on, you know, like, you know, we're all kind of invested in this sort of, you know, this sporting, you know, worldwide event that everybody's super into. And, you know, it's a good time to really reflect on, you know, what the differences, you know, are and these invisible lines in the sand sometimes. So, yeah, I don't know. That was a cool thing. It was neat hearing. I remember when we got Jose Iglesias, I kind of read about his story and, you know, how he had to kind of sneak across the border in Montana, like out in the middle of nowhere, you know, to a car that was supposed to pick him up. Like, you just, you know, what this kid had to go through when he was like 19, and then trying to learn English in these cheap motel rooms from soap operas and his roommates and just badgering them. It's a tough road for those guys. So, yeah, it was cool to see both of them receive their citizenship last week. That was pretty neat and cool that the Tigers celebrated it.
Yeah, and it's just a side note, I am watching the Marlins Rays go into the 13th inning here.
Oh, man.
And I totally forgot that Brian Holiday played for the Miami Marlins now.
Oh, is that where he is? I didn't know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, both Marlin, Holiday and Cameron Maben. So lots of old friends in this game.
Oh, yeah. Yep, and Mr. Shohei Ohtani, we'll see if it's advisable that he's going to come back and hit. I haven't read if they're going to have him play in the outfield or just DH. Seems like DHing would be the right way to go. You don't want him throwing a ball from the outfield either, I would imagine.
Yeah, like,
so
let's not get carried away, but I'm just glad it wasn't Tommy John. Good heavens.
Not yet, anyway. Yeah, yeah. We'll see how it goes. Hopefully hopefully that thing heals up well and he can kind of hold up the way Tanaka has as well. So, yeah, that's kind of an interesting little storyline to watch. And then, you know, like the other thing that's going on, you know, obviously, you know, Rob and I did a draft thing for the Patreon and we've talked a little bit of draft, but it's been kind of cool seeing some of these guys get assigned and kind of come out and make a little bit of a name for themselves right off the bat. Obviously, just the best named one is, of course, Brock Deathridge.
Deathridge!
Yeah,
it is a name meant to be in all caps.
Yeah, he hit two home runs in his, you know, four home runs in his first two GCL games, including a grand slam. And has done pretty well for the Whitecaps so far. And Parker Meadows, who was the Tigers' second round pick, came out and hit a home run in one of his first games. Cody Clemens already has a highlight reel defensive play. So it's been neat kind of seeing some of those guys show up and announce their presence. Because, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've been following kind of the farm system for maybe like 3 years, like intensely. And you just don't see this, like, you know, by and large, like the guys, the Tigers have taken after the fourth and fifth round have just sort of fizzled. Most of them are still there kind of just as like role players. So it's cool to see those guys, you know, at least kind of announce their presence a little bit. I'm excited to see what Cody Clemens can do. I mean, there's a part of him that really reminds me a lot of Ian Kinsler. Like,
he's got that sassy kind of, I mean, sassy seems like a write-off word, but he's got that, cheeky might be the better word for it. Like, he's definitely got some attitude, and he's not afraid to let it show. And if he can be, you know, half the player defensively that Ian Kinsler was, he can keep that attitude. Kinsler got to get away with a lot because he was Ian Kinsler. And I think that Clemens has definitely something to be excited about. But we'll see if it actually amounts to anything.
And we're still waiting to see where Casey Mize will end up. So we haven't gotten an announcement there. It's still kind of hard to tell. Like, you'd think he would probably go to, they would just keep him at Lakeland, since that's kind of the Tigers' home and they can keep a good eye on him. But we'll just kind of have to see how that goes. Some of the Tigers pitchers, though, have all leveled up. A lot of the top prospects have moved up recently, and that's been cool to see. Matt Manning, in particular, put together a couple of awesome starts for the Whitecaps and moved up to Lakeland, and he will pitch on the 4th of July for them for the first time. And Alex Fajardo has come up to Erie and done very well as well. So, and we also have Franklin Perez, who is working his way back from an oblique tear, and looks like he should be probably ready to get into games probably right after the All-Star break. Maybe he could go sooner, but you always see teams kind of just wait and just go after the All-Star break. So we'll see how, you know, we'll see if that's what they decide there. But yeah, it'll be nice to, it's nice to kind of see the farm system guys coming along, and a lot of the top prospects doing well, the guys who were injured kind of getting back into the fold here. And there's been some surprises too. Jacob Robson has done very well. The Maple Hammer from over in Ontario, you know, who we all thought, like, maybe that guy could be a solid fourth outfielder. And all of a sudden, the last couple weeks, he's found this monster power stroke and has done very well since going up to Toledo as well. So he'll be neat to follow. And then Dez Cameron is just absolutely wrecking shop since he got to Erie. And that's been a really good sign, because he's probably, between him and Isaac Paredes, probably the best Tigers position prospect at this point. And so that's been nice to see him move up. And those guys are kind of more fun to watch. Honestly, at this point, like, I got minor league TV last year for the first time, and I've actually used it more than I have MLB this year. So,
oh, that's saying something.
Yeah, they're just, you know, last year, you know, I was watching Verlander when he went to the Astros. I watched a lot of those games and some other stuff. But yeah, this year I've been just kind of like, nope, not so much. I'm just gonna watch the Tigers and follow the farm. And yeah, the farm's been pretty rewarding, especially of late. So that's been good to see. Jake Rogers. Prospect extraordinary.
Yeah, he's kind of, I don't know. I want him to be more better, more better than he is.
Yeah, he's been doing well, though. The last 2 months, he's really picked it up. He had a slow start, but he's been going well and hit a walk-off homer for the Seawolves tonight. And I think he may have 10 home runs now. He looks a lot like James McCann to me, like, with a bat, and that would be ideal. No, if he could hit like James McCann, but be like twice the catcher that James McCann is, which is the reputation that Jake Rogers has, that would be fine. So yeah, so we'll just have to see how those guys develop over the course of the summer here. But yeah, that's kind of where we stand. I wish there was more fun stuff to talk about with the Tigers, but you know, we're just gonna have to kind of suffer through this, I'm afraid. Hopefully Nick will be making a push for 30 home runs, and maybe Nico will keep it going and we'll see some fun stuff. But until we start seeing some more prospects come up, yeah, it's just kind of a bit of a tough watch, and I don't blame fans for feeling the same way.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, I don't know. I want us to get back to fun goose levels of fun, and yeah. I don't care if we win or lose, as long as we're enjoying it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and that's possible. You know, I would imagine, I don't think this team is going to totally fold up the way they did last year, especially because we're probably not going to trade that many guys away, and maybe we'll see. Maybe we'll see a Jake Robson or a Kristen Stewart or someone like that later in the year. We might see a Kyle Funkhauser come up and pitch a little bit, something like that. So there'll be those things to look forward to a little bit further on. But yeah, the trade deadline talks aren't going to center around the Tigers. That doesn't seem like, unless somebody gets crazy for Michael Fulmer. So
yeah, that's about it.
Yep, exactly.
pretty boring.
Yep. So we were off for a few weeks, and we're going to try to keep the schedule going. We also have our newest writer, Keenan Carter, has been doing a podcast here and there called the Minor League Tracker Podcast, so you can keep an eye out on the site for that as well. I might wander over there and talk about the farm with him at some point, or have him on here. So we'll try to do that. But there's going to be some podcast content coming this month. And other than that, we'll just keep hanging in there. That's all we can do this year.
Yeah, we'll actually start recording now. I don't think I'm going to be sent on any more work trips, so we'll be okay.
Yeah, well, hopefully there'll be more vacations coming at some point. But
yeah.
I got to get to the UP a couple times here, so I'm sure we'll miss a few, but we'll do our best. Yeah, and I guess that's about it. Anything else to add tonight?
No, I am going to be watching this Marlins versus Rays game for the rest of time, because we're still in the 13th inning and this is impossible.
Lord.
I was really expecting that I would go in the 10th and be able to switch over to Mariners Angels, but no, bottom of the 13th and we're still here throughout this entire podcast. They're still going to be playing this game tomorrow.
Yeah, if you see a little, kind of skinny little guy come out of the bullpen who you don't recognize, who looks freshly shaven, I'm going to just assume, Sergio Romo decided.
He's been in already.
I know. He's going to shave the mustache off and sneak back in.
Oh, you can pull that, like that Ichiro in the dugout thing.
That was great.
I like it. Yeah. He had some pretty comical expressions going during his at bat. So I have to say I enjoyed that, but man, they just need somebody to score.
Somebody end this game, please.
Yeah.
All right. So we will catch up with you guys all again next week. You can follow Ashley at 90 Feet From Home on Twitter. You can follow me, Brandon Day, at Fiscadoro74 on Twitter. And please read our stuff over at blushyboys.com. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Ashley.
Good night.
Good night.